This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. At the height of the recession in 2009, NPR contributor Caitlin Shetterly produced a series of emotional radio diaries documenting the financial devastation her family faced in Los Angeles.
She's turned those diaries and the story of how they rebuilt their lives into a new book, Made for You and Me, Going West, Going Broke, Finding Home.
Caitlin recently shared her story with Radio Boston. She began with an excerpt from the book.
Many things in our lives were perfect. We loved our animals. We loved each other. We loved much of the work we did. And we loved our rented apartment. But there was this small corner of us, individually and together, that wanted more. For different reasons, we were both people who had spent a good deal of time running from our lives. I wanted to run from the pain of my parents' ruptured marriage, and Dan wanted to get as far away from the trailer park as he could. With all of this running built into our DNA, neither of us enjoyed standing still for too long. And, also, our ambitions and dreams were always trained on what we thought might be greener pastures somewhere else, where we might be bigger players in more expansive markets. There was something always about Portland and Maine that felt too small somehow, like there was a glass ceiling that we were always banging our heads against. In the backs of our minds, we just expected that someday, sooner rather than later, we'd try to live someplace else, somewhere that might give our careers the playing fields we craved. But at that time, this desire was more like the intermittent drone of an elusive mosquito in a hot July bedroom. We didn't yet know how real it was about to become.
So, Caitlin, you ended up finding that playing field, but it was out in California. Why there?
That's a really interesting question. You know, my husband and I were married in August of 2007, and a few months later, around Christmas of 2007, the economy started to wobble, as many of us remember. And I don't think anyone at that time really understood what that wobble was going to mean. But my husband's job was suddenly put to part-time, and really, honestly, we needed his job to be full-time to make our lives work. So something was going to have to change. We had friends out in L.A. who had always been beckoning us to the sunny skies and the thrill of Hollywood and the thrill of taking our careers to a bigger level. And so, you know, one night Dan looked at me and said, why don't we go west?
Well, you being a radio producer for NPR, you took your radio recording equipment with you, and then you got to L.A., as you describe in the book, but not everything went according to plan, if I can put it that way. We've actually got a little bit of tape that you recorded. This is like actual tape between of a conversation between you and your husband, Dan. So let's just take a little listen to that.
We're in a terrible situation. We're on the verge of losing everything.
What do you mean, losing everything? I mean, losing...
Well, we have no income, Kate. We have medical bills, we have credit card debt, we have rent.
So, Caitlin, that does not sound like the golden pastures of the promised land of California. What happened?
Yeah, that was a full year after we got there. Mm-hmm. So we got there, and I got pregnant the week we got there. That was certainly not in the plans, but it had a happy ending, of course. And then I got sick with this rare pregnancy sickness that actually kept me in bed for much of my pregnancy. So Dan had to kind of go out there and hustle up jobs. Eventually, Dan was doing great, actually. He was bringing in more money than we'd ever made, and things were picking up. And then the last day he had a job was on December 20th, 2008. And then our son was born the first week of January. And 2 weeks after he was born, every job Dan had lined up through May was canceled. California was going through a crisis then with the economy. And I mean, we all were, but California was really, it was like the San Andreas Fault. It had fallen off the end of the country there. And so we were kind of stranded 3,000 miles from home with a brand new baby and no income.
Nevertheless, I think one of the things which is most arresting about your story is, like, as you said, you had no income, you have this tiny newborn baby boy, but you still wanted to make it work. I mean, if I remember correctly, you even considered just not paying your rent and facing eviction, but sticking it out.
Yeah, we considered lots of crazy things. We considered selling my breast milk for a little while, but that was, you know, sort of one of those crazy, funny things you think of. I mean, when you're in a situation like that, you'll do anything, right, to support your family. I mean, you'll do whatever you can do to kind of survive, and then you're desperate. Your mind goes all over the place.
You mentioned facing the pressures of being in the midst of one of the worst areas of the recession, that being California. I mean, the pressures of enduring that as a new mom, but you were also, of course, a wife as well to your husband, Dan, and I imagine that all the pressures had an effect on your relationship with him. You've got some more tape that you recorded from that time. Here's a little clip of when you basically were sort of telling Dan that you wanted him to fix all the problems, or at least as many problems as he could. So let's listen.
That's like a total gender bias. I mean, that's ridiculous.
I know. It's just there's a part of me that just wants you to fix it.
I'm trying to fix it. I'm trying every f-ing day to fix it.
I love that my husband dropped the F-bomb on national public radio, but it was hard. It was hard, right? You know, I mean, when anyone loses a job, it's hard on the unit. You know, my husband was going door to door, anything from coffee shops to big chain stores to restaurants to anywhere, mm-hmm. trying to get a job. And the shame that he felt and the anger and the frustration was just enormous. You know, here we are. A young, middle, working-class family that grew up believing that, the fruited plains were ours to harvest, and all we had to do was work hard. And suddenly this thing had happened to the economy, and we were stranded. You know, as Dan said to me, this is nothing I can fix with my two hands.
Right.
And that was terrifying for him, because this is a guy who's built all our furniture, who's scrambled his way out of the trailer park, put himself through college, made a family. He's upwardly mobile. You know, he's living the American dream, and he can't fix this with his own two hands. It's tough.
One of the things which I think when people hear that bit of tape that so stops you in your tracks is that tragic familiarity of that conversation, because it's happened in millions of households across the United States. But the thing is even though it's so familiar, it's so intimate at the same time. It's not something that people, even though maybe you or your neighbors are having that same kind of conversation, it's not something that you want to hear outside of the home. And yet you brought your microphone to these really intense private moments between you and your husband, Dan.
I
mean, did that have an effect on the way you were experiencing the crashing recession all around you, or even experiencing your marriage?
That's such an interesting question. I mean, all I can say is that a tension did hover between us. It was very private. It was very intimate. And it was really scary to show the world that kind of intimacy, actually. But, you know, those richer or poorer vows, we were testing those.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe in each other. And so what we did is we continued to communicate. And here was the wonderful thing about doing those NPR audio diaries, was that we had to talk to each other to do them.
You know, as you hinted earlier, the fix, or a partial fix for the two of you, came when you decided to leave California and go back home, which I imagine was a really tough decision to make. So I want to play a little bit more tape from the time where you were wrestling with whether or not to leave California and go back home to Maine. Let's listen.
You know, I hate saying that because I feel like we're selling our dreams down the river, but, you know, this is how I feel. I feel like this situation makes me want to smash something, but the situation itself is already smashing everything. So there's nothing for me to get angry and break about. I mean, it's like I can't even break my own dreams because they're being broken for me.
You hear me saying shush, shush, shush because our brand new baby's sleeping in the other room.
Yeah. I mean, the way he puts it is just so spot on, that the dreams were being broken for you.
Of course, our dreams felt smashed. And I think they felt smashed for so many people. But I was a brand new mother, and it really wasn't just about me anymore.
Right.
So I took a big gulp. And we packed up and we came back home.
Well, Caitlin, I imagine that a lot of people listening to this now, what they really want to know is how you guys are doing now. I mean, has Dan been able to find work, and what's life like?
Everybody wants to know that. Everyone wants to know how Dan is, too, especially because the book is so much about him. I'll answer that in a couple of ways. First, I would say that the book is a love story, and it's about our marriage and how we got through a tough time. And part of the way that we are now is that we got through that because we really talked to each other and we told each other every night things that we were grateful for with each other. But my husband got into graduate school. He couldn't get a job. It was still really tough. And then I sold the proposal for this book. And on that day, we had $16 in our bank account. So the book, you know, laughably, because the writers don't actually get paid much, saved our lives. And now my husband does a bunch of odd jobs. He's finishing his graduate school year at Mass Art, and we just are cobbling our lives together. But I got to tell you, it's still really tough out there.
Caitlin, before I let you go, the last thing I'm curious about is Maine and what living there means to you. Because when we started this conversation with the reading that you shared, you said Maine felt like a glass ceiling. Does it feel different now?
You know, the wonderful thing about Maine is it'll always take you back. And I always say that Maine is more like a relative than a state. It's really hard to ever let hold of Maine. And coming home and coming home with a renewed and different idea of how we needed to live in the world and a different American dream that involved living communally and baking sort of a communal bread, really, and reaching out to help someone else and also being willing to ask for help, that has completely changed our way that we live in Maine because we no longer think that we just kind of have to make it. What does make it really mean? We think instead now we need to live together with our community, and we now do that. I don't know that we would have lived that way if we hadn't had to come home and do that with my mother.
Well, Caitlin Shetterly, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was really fun, and it's just so nice to be home in New England and to have my story go out to people in Boston. I know that a lot of people in the Boston area have been hit hard by this recession, and I want to tell them that they're not alone, and I know what it's like.
Caitlin Shetterly is the author of Made for You and Me, Going West, Going Broke, Finding Home. She'll be appearing tonight at the Water Street Books in Exeter, New Hampshire at 7 p.m. For more information, visit our website, radioboston.org.